Welcome to Stick Together, Australia's only national radio show all about workers' rights and social justice issues. Stick Together is produced at 3CR Radio in Melbourne and broadcast to you around the country on Community Radio Network. I'm Denis Rogatyuk. Today, we're going to start our show with paying a tribute to yet another comrade who has passed away recently, Jerry Conlon. Wrongly accused of carrying out bombings of pubs in the garrison town of Guildford, he was jailed for nearly 15 years between 1974 and 1989, when his conviction and the conviction of three others was overturned. The case became known as the Guildford Four. Despite the majority of evidence pointing otherwise, as well as the testimonies given by the Irish Republican Army members behind the bombing, Jerry was kept in prison, even being threatened and tortured into signing a confession to the crime he did not commit. He suffered from brutal abuse, rendition, and torture at the hands of the British during his imprisonment. When the conviction was finally overturned and Jerry was released, he articulated the experience he suffered as an innocent political prisoner in the book Proved Innocent, later to be adapted into a movie, In the Name of the Father, where Jerry was portrayed by Daniel Day-Lewis. The mental strain and the physical degradation that Jerry endured throughout the years of his imprisonment took a heavy toll on his health. He suffered from long-term psychological trauma, sometimes accompanied by drug abuse. But in the end, he always managed to provide a powerful voice to all those who have been wrongly accused and suffered injustice at the hands of the government or the system. Most recently, he became an advocate and supporter of the Guantanamo Bay detainees, often comparing his own experiences to theirs. Jerry undertook a tour of Australia in 2010, speaking out against the injustice that befell the construction worker, Ark Tribe, during the latter's fight for workplace safety, Flinders University site in South Australia. He also recalled the memories of his arrest and imprisonment at an Maritime Union of Australia meeting organized in Melbourne. Jerry passed away from lung cancer on June 21st, in his home in Belfast. He was 60 years old. We will now hear a part of the speech that he delivered during his tour in Australia, discussing his imprisonment and emphasizing the role that the unions and community groups can play in organizing an effective defense of the wrongly accused.
We were writing this joint letter campaign. It's 1985. First Tuesday on World in Action did programs question the validity of the evidence that convicted us. From that, there was an inquiry that Douglas Hard announced. And on the 20th of January, 1987, Douglas Hard sent the Birmingham 6 case back to the appeal court, and he rejected the Guildford case. And, you know, knowing the Brits, because they kept moving the fucking goalpost, I sort of thought, well, you know, they're setting these guys up for a fall, and they're going to then give us an appeal. And the reason they were going to give us an appeal, and it was going to be a successful appeal, because they actually had the people who did it in custody who'd admitted it. Anyway, on the 19th of October, 1989, they finally released me. And I came out and I said what I said. Spent 15 years in jail for something I didn't do, something I didn't know nothing about. Watched my father die in jail. He was an innocent man. The Maguires were innocent. Let's hope the Birmingham Six are next. But little did I know, getting out of prison was only the start of another nightmare. Because while I was in prison, I seen two people being murdered in front of me by the same guy 5 years apart. Violent, brutal deaths. I heard the screams of young prisoners who were being gang raped with the okay of the prison authorities. I seen people self-harm and commit suicide. And the horror of being tortured never leaves you, never leaves you. When I look around, I think, how did the campaigns for the Birmingham Six and the Guildford Four and the Maguires evolved? And I reckon it was in clubs and little halls like this, but with not as many people. And then I started thinking, you know, we were four different people at Guildford: Hill, Armstrong, Conlon, and Richardson. When them families got together, they had a stronger voice than the individual. And then when they linked up with The Birmingham Six campaign, they even had a stronger voice. And this is what the unions are about. They're about protecting people. They're about speaking out for people. They're about looking out for people. We were able to coordinate all the groups, all the politicians, all the church dignitaries into one single group. And with one single group, we had a powerful voice. And this is what the unions represent to us. Because make no mistakes, governments think well ahead in their strategy. And when they designed the Prevention of Terrorism Act and implemented, and I was the second person to be arrested under it in November of 1974, within 10 years, they had targeted, through the Prevention of Terrorism Act, the black community. Then Thatcher, when she got in power, targeted the unions with it. Legislation that's brought in, designed for one specific act, should never be allowed to become common policing and common laws. Because when they do that, they have people in mind of who they're going to use it against. And as Paddy Joe Hill says so eloquently, there is one law for them and another for us. Fuck that. There's a lot more of us than there is of them. We're all the same. We're all the same. We work hard. We demand to have safe and healthy issues at the forefront of every negotiation, to bring home a decent pay, and more importantly, for the workers to come home safe to their families. As Chris Kane says, there's nothing worse than going to a family who's lost someone, who's not coming home. And as John McManus said, there has been so many innocent people released from prison who've died way before their time, who came out and they couldn't handle their freedom, who started medicating themselves through alcohol and drugs, me being one of them. They dragged me out of a cave, out of a hole that I dug for myself. And to come here and to feel the warmth, the generosity, the inspiration, and the solidarity of the unions is absolutely fantastic. Education, organization, dedication, solidarity. Thank you very much.
You're listening to Stick Together, workers' stories and union news. Broadcast around the country every week on the Community Radio Network.
Throughout the last few weeks, we've seen a number of large-scale actions take place throughout the country in response to the federal budget. In Melbourne, tens of thousands rallied on June 12th as part of the Bust the Budget. Thousands marched to defend Medicare throughout the major cities, while senior members of the Liberal Party continued to be confronted by groups of students throughout the country, angry and frustrated at the proposed cuts to education and the deregulation of universities. It is becoming increasingly obvious that what we truly need is a countrywide mass movement backed by the trade unions and community and grassroots organizations. A movement that does not see itself as being part of the established political structure dominated by liberals and labor. A movement that truly conveys the frustrations and the grievances of the people of this country, and is able to translate it into action that will help to fundamentally change the nature of political power and institute a new type of people-powered democracy. It so happens that movements like these already exist far across the world in the region of Southern Europe. The recent elections to the European Parliament have conveyed an atmosphere of Euroscepticism and nationalism propelled by far-right movements in France, Hungary, Greece, Denmark and Austria, among others. But at the same time, they have helped to expose the weakness and the unpopularity of various austerity regimes, especially those that exist within a two-party framework. At the same time, a sustained movement against austerity and the respective political elite has been building, such as the one in Spain, where massed grassroots movements, such as the Indignados and Marches for Dignity, have been building in both size and frequency for the past several years. So what can we learn from the efforts and struggles of our Hispanic comrades? And now we have with us Dick Nichols, the Green Left weekly correspondent in Europe, who currently lives in Barcelona and has been covering the rise of Indignados and Podemos. Dick, welcome to Stick Together.
Thanks very much.
Now, Dick, we've seen the rise of the National Front in France, the Golden Dawn in Greece, and the Eurosceptic UKIP in the UK. However, this has not really been the case in Spain in the recent EU elections. There's been no major far-right or Eurosceptic party that has registered any significant success. Why do you think that is?
I think it's a function of Spanish politics in the Spanish state. This is not to say that racism doesn't exist, xenophobia doesn't exist, and there's not quite strong xenophobia in sections of the working class, which is the basis for the gain of these parties in Northern Europe. The threat of our jobs being taken away by outsiders, whether they're from Northern Africa or from Eastern Europe. That's the psychological basis for it. But in Spain, the specific differences, I think, are very clear. One is that the country still divides left-right. It divides very strongly for the right wing, which has Francoist roots and is still strong in a lot of the institutions of Francoism. Though they've been transformed and have different names, survive, particularly in the judiciary. So that's represented in the Popular Party. So you have in the Popular Party, if you're a racist, you vote for the PP. The mainstream bourgeois party has a space in its ranks for people who for support that in other countries would have a separate party. That's important to stress. Then you have the other question for Spain, which is the national question. So that the enemy, if you want to talk about for different people, is not outsiders. The enemy is the Spanish state, which represses, the right to determine of the Catalans and the right of self-determination of the Catalans, the Basques, the Galicians. Or the enemy is the Basques, then the Galicians and the Catalans, who want to break up the Spanish state. So the sort of national question becomes where you get your scapegoats. The scapegoats are in terms of the internal national question more than they are in terms of, threats from outsiders, threats from people coming from Eastern Europe to take our jobs, et cetera, et cetera. So, and I think that's the mass psychology. So if you talk to, as I do, a lot of ordinary workers, you get superficial racist reactions to, Africans or especially Moors. But it's the real sentiment that drive politics are not those. And I think that's the underlying social reason why we don't see a large right-wing party.
But we have also seen the rise of Podemos, and it has certainly been one of the most prominent recent political developments in Spain, especially since they were not even a registered political party before the start of the year. What do you think was the main reason for their electoral success?
The main reason was that there's a mass of people there. There's a mass of people who did not feel represented by any of the existing parties, including the United Left, which is the party to the left of the social democracy, and which is basically a coalition between the old Communist Party and a lot of other groups, because they felt that they were part of the system. And this comes the sentiment that the parties are the problem, and the phrase which is very popular here, the political caste is the problem, and we want something that is ours and something that is new. That lies at the roots of Podemos. I mean, Podemos has a program that is very close to the program of the United Left, if you look at the actual demands and proposals. But the sticking point in discussions before in negotiations before the European elections between these two parties was that the United Left refused to accept a citizen-based pre-selections, that is the open pre-selections of candidates. They said, no, we can't construct an alliance if on that basis, and we're trying to construct an alliance between different organisations. And Podemos's position was that is fundamental. To construct a new sort of politics against the political caste, it has to come from the bottom up, from the citizens, and whoever is elected in that way can really be guaranteed to represent people. Mm-hmm. And I think that psychology, that political psychology, is the key thing that explains Podemos.
And can you tell us a bit more about their organizational structure, whether or not they would be able to sustain themselves as a long-term anti-capitalist movement?
Well, that's their challenge. I mean, Podemos was a step forward in terms of giving political representation to the Indignados movement, which is very amorphous and very differentiated. It was a step forward because it gave a political voice to that. But it was an electoral platform. It's an electoral platform with a set of positions which are determined democratically. By consulting the people. 33,000 people participated in the consultations that developed the platform. But now, of course, is their big challenge, and the big challenge whether they're going to, what structure they're going to have. And here, of course, they run smack bang against the weaknesses of the position that everything that exists up to now is a function of the political caste, everything, including the United Left. And so then a debate has immediately broken out in Podemos now about how to make decisions. Should we have decision-making via the internet where everybody who's a member or a certified sympathiser can vote? And then if that is the case, what is the function of the local circles of Podemos sympathisers, of which there are 400, and then there are other circles which are thematically based, like around economics, women's rights, etc., etc.? Mm-hmm. What is their role in this? Now, this is not clear. This is the discussion of the moment, and this is going to be thrashed out over the summer, and there will be the founding congress of Podemos in October. My feeling is that they will come out of this okay, that the arguments for, they will reach a balance, that the arguments for having a role for the activists in the circles, a serious role, that means that if you want to be a Podemos activist, you have a determining vote on key issues, and the balance of that against having an all-in membership internet-based vote will be worked out.
And has there been any major collaboration between the militant trade unions in Spain and the anti-establishment organizations such as Podemos?
I think there's been a lot of collaboration, but it doesn't go through organizations. Or it goes through organizations which are neither parties nor unions properly specified. For example, there are things called platforms, like the Civic Forum, Civic Platform, was one of the main organizing bodies of the Marches for Dignity in March 22. I don't know whether people heard about this in Australia, but these were marches. Well, the slogan was bread, freedom, a roof over our heads. And these were marches against austerity, which were done as in the 30s from all points of the Spanish border to Madrid. And these were massive. Final demonstration in Madrid was massive. You know, we're talking up to 1.5 million, 2 million people. And they mobilized a lot of positive sentiment. And the reason they did that was because of the traditional trade union confederations have really retreated from leading the anti-austerity fight here. But that was not organized either by the alternative unions like the anarcho-syndicalist CGT or other smaller union federations, nor by parties. It was organized by people who were in parties, like a lot of the people from the United Left were involved in this, especially one of the leaders of it is in the Communist Party and in the United Left. Other people came from anarcho-syndicalist backgrounds. It was just an idea, a good idea, a good way to mobilize people that drew together everybody who wanted to do something, and that included parties, platforms, social campaign groups like the platform of mortgage victims, etc., etc. It's not like, say, Australia or England, where you have, you know, very definite distinctions between political parties, trade unions, campaign organisations around, you know, single-issued campaign mm-hmm. organisations. You have a great melange of different forms of organising that can come together around ideas whose time has come, and the marches on Madrid was an example of that.
And finally, as you no doubt have heard, the Abbott government in Australia now seeks to introduce a massive package of austerity measures, not too different from his conservative counterpart in Spain. What lessons do you think the Australian workers can draw from the experience of Podemos in Spain?
Podemos, and before that, the Indignado movement, exploded onto the scene because nobody was doing anything. Well, or the unions were doing their thing, but in a very lackluster and half-hearted and formalistic sort of way. The fact is that there's a mass of angry people, especially young people, whose futures were being destroyed by the austerity and by the crisis, and that this was becoming a real problem here. And it started, this started, interestingly enough, in Portugal, where there was just somebody just said, we're going to have a march against austerity. And they expected to get 50,000 people and they got 500,000. And then that came across to Spain. So what I'm saying here is that this all happened because of the failure or the incapacity of the unions to mobilize, to lead the existing social forms of social organization to lead. That's where, you know, the Indignados and Podemos come from. That's why they exist. Now, in Australia, I've been out of the place for 4 years now, but just from reading things, I think what the channel for action here has got to be to make the trade union movements build a left in the unions, build a proposal that says to the unions, do the right thing. I noticed that the Socialist Alliance, my organisation in Australia, is very active in the campaign, block the budget. That's exactly what you should be doing, and putting the pressure on the union movements to do that. And then all social movements that exist can come on board that struggle. So what am I saying? I don't think that there is any direct lesson to be drawn for an Australian struggle. From the Spanish situation. And of course, we've had in Australia, we've had sort of equivalent things like the, you know, Occupy the Squares sort of movement, the 99% versus the 1%. But does this really exist now? I mean, I just don't know. And what power of initiative and what power of drawing people together does it have? Mm-hmm. So I'm just a bit skeptical about plucking lessons from other countries and trying to apply them to your own experience. I think that can be a recipe for making serious mistakes. That's it.
Fair enough. Well, anyway, thank you very much for joining us on the show today, Dick, and hope to hear more positive news from the developments in Spain.
Thanks very much.
Stick together.
You're listening to Stick Together on Community Radio.
Coming back to Australia now, let's have a look at some new and creative initiatives launched by some unions in the effort to both combat the overall decline in membership and to extend the solidarity networks to the wider communities. I am talking, of course, about everybody's favorite red union, the National Union of Workers, which has recently launched the program of community memberships. Joining us now is one of the masterminds behind the program, the Assistant Secretary of the General Branch, Godfrey Moores. Welcome back to Stick Together, comrade.
Thanks for having me, Dennis. I'm glad to be here.
Oh, it's always a pleasure having you on Stick Together, Godfrey. Now, first things first, how are your efforts going at recruiting community members?
Well, we've been live for 3 weeks now. We've just soft launched the program in June to get a start and iron out the difficulties for us and do those things that you can only do when you try something in the field. And we're up to 70 members, community members now over the course of 3 weeks, which is fantastic. We're up where we want to be for this time of the year.
Well, from little things, big things grow, as they say.
Exactly. Yeah.
Do you see this as an NUW-only project, or can you see this becoming sort of a beacon of hope for other unions to follow in the future if it succeeds?
Look, I can see, particularly as we live in a world where work is becoming more scarce, as we become more productive and there's less need for less labour time to get the product, I can see a world where we could have 10, 11 million community members in this country because we're all united by a desire for justice, a desire for a decent living, and a desire to live in safe and sustainable communities. We don't want this to just be an NUW-only thing. We want this to be a movement-wide thing, and we're just going out on a limb to prove that it works, to prove that existing industrial union members want to do this and be part of this so they can have more power and a greater say at work. So we're doing this just to prove that it can happen, but we want everyone to come with us. We want all the other unions, the ACTU, peak bodies, because that's when this is really going to work, when we have maximum solidarity.
So what do you really see as the long-term vision for the project? Like, do you see this functioning as more of a separate community identity?
Look, I see this as project as transforming the union movement as we know it, as something that is relevant for everyone in work, outside of work. And what this means is that there's greater unity and harmony between the industrial and community side, that it's relevant for everyone, that an industrial member can go and participate in a union community group. So in that respect, there isn't a separation, but what we do envisage is, like we have the National Union of Workers at Woolworths or at Coles, like it's at a workplace, we'll see community members setting up their own groups. It might be public housing tenants in Broadmeadows, pensioners in Morwell, people who are united to achieve cooperative workplaces. So any form of grouping where people want to apply union values, basic progressive values, in any geographic sense or for any issue, could end up setting their own site groups through our community membership program, their own community group.
So what kind of perks or aspects is the community membership offering right now, and how can it help these community groups to start off?
Well, people can join up through www.communitymember.com.au, and what we're offering people at the moment is something where they pay $1 a week to be a community member of the National Union of Workers, and what you get through that is all the existing non-industrial services that a union member will get as well, whether it's access to industry superannuation, members' equity, a lot of other stuff that unions do. But the core, the guts of it, is the ability to be involved in and have a say in NUW campaigns, the ability to use the existing union infrastructure to organise, whether it's meeting rooms, activist training, the ability to take all the existing NUW tools that we have and petitions and what we're building, which is quite exciting with our web space, the ability to use all of that to campaign with our union values within the community. We're offering people the ability to go out there and make change in a supportive, structured environment.
It's very heartening to hear. A very similar program has also been adopted by Unite the Union in Britain and is now encompasses over 300 different community members across the UK. Is this also a goal that you're striving towards?
Yeah, we've looked quite closely at Unite's effort, and I think they do provide a good example that we can learn from, and we've modelled what we've done quite closely from what we know that Unite are doing. And this community membership thing is actually quite relevant to fighting back against austerity in the UK, and it's one of the reasons that we've instituted this, because it's our members as workers who get affected by the Medicare co-payment. It's workers who also get affected by the increase to the pension age when you have to spend your life lifting boxes. So we've looked quite closely at Unite. We're taking inspiration from them, and we're taking inspiration from their involvement in the general fight back and campaign against austerity. And this community membership thing, something that we think every union can take up, the entire union movement can take up, part of the fight back against the budget, against austerity, and applying our values of solidarity to everyone in this country so we can, you know, get about a new deal, a new charter of what this country should look like so that it works for everybody, not just the few.
Well, thank you very much for being on board with us once again, and we wish you best of luck for the success of the community membership program.
Thanks, Dennis. Thanks for having me. Much appreciated.
Well, that will be all for Stick Together this week. I'm Dennis Rogatyuk. Before finishing off, I'd like to thank the Community Broadcasting Federation for its financial support of the program. We'd also like to remind listeners that the Earthworker Cooperative is currently in the process of raising funds for the next stage of the worker-controlled green manufacturing. Go to startsomegood.com.au/earthworker for information on how to pledge your financial support. I hope you enjoyed our broad selection of topics, and don't forget to tune in next week.